email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, lovely to be joined in studio on this Monday afternoon by author and podcaster Sophie White. Her new novel is My Hot Friend and it's out now. Good afternoon, Sophie.
Hello, how are you?
Good, good. Book number 7, I was saying.
Yeah, that's right.
So 2 non-fiction and 5 novels.
That's right,
yes,
yeah.
Right.
I barely can keep track.
Is that in 7 years? 7 books in 7 years?
It is, yeah. Although there was a couple of years where I didn't. So my first book came out in 2016.
Yeah.
And then I had a bit of a gap. And then my next book came out in 2019. So I guess it's 6 books in 4 years.
Right.
So,
and you're writing all the time. People recognise your work from the Sunday Independent.
Yes, I write every week there in the Life magazine.
Yes.
I write a column called Nobody Tells You, which I love doing, absolutely love doing it. It's great having a deadline every week, actually, when you're writing books, because that's such a big project. But
it's like training, is it? It's like doing short runs and then you have to do the marathon for the book.
I was about to say, I was like, you're chatting to Ray, bring in running.
No, you don't
because
have to bring in running.
He'll get Honestly, it. He'll get it. Yeah, it is. It's like a marathon. Yeah, totally. never done a marathon.
This is your longest run then. Let's keep the analogy going for a moment. Because this comes in at what, 450 or 489 pages?
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah. It is like, yeah, girth-wise, my biggest book.
I think
value for money.
Yes. So it's about friendship, female friendship.
It is, which is
a hot topic. I don't like using that term, but because we had Elizabeth Day in recently, and every
time
I open up one of the Sunday magazines, there's an article about. You wrote an article yesterday about it.
I did, and like the New York Times had a piece about it a couple of weeks ago. The Cut, obviously, Elizabeth Day's Friendaholic is a non-fiction book that's just come out.
Yeah.
And like, it's really weird because it's hard to plan. You know, if you're writing a book, you're writing it a year or more in advance. It's hard to know what like the cultural conversation is going to be. But like, I just kept thinking there really isn't enough stories that really center friendship.
Yes.
You know, and like, I suppose the inspiration for My Hot Friend began like quite a few years ago when I was writing an article about friendship breakups and I put it out on my Instagram. Has anyone had a friendship breakup? Would you like to talk to me anonymously for this article? And I've never had a response like it to any topic. Like the amount of women mainly like got in touch and they said they'd broken up with friends. It had been more painful than any romantic breakups they'd ever had, that they had been, you know, they'd cried, and you know, I just thought, oh my God, there's really something in this.
Mm.
And like, so, you know, with my commercial fiction, I'm always like seeking to entertain, you know, I want to write romps basically and like fun and comedy, but I always have darker themes because that's life. Like,
yes.
And I was very interested in centering friendship.
So the reason you did that article in the first place was because you had split up with a friend, a very good friend of yours. Now it all came right in the end. It was a happy ever after.
Yeah, I did have one row with a friend that like really undid me. And it was quite short. But like I can go like fairly histrionic fast, not to 90. But the thing as well that really struck me when I was having this like kind of friendship breakup or like we were on a break, like Ross and Rachel. I was so upset. Like I was more upset than any fight I'd ever had with my husband. And I was kind of like analyzing it and being like, why is it so disturbing? And then I was like, well, I've been with her way longer than I've been with my husband.
Yes.
I've been with her 30 years, you know? And I'm like, not that I'd be like putting my husband out with the bins, but...
There are conversations you probably can't... I know, not probably, there are conversations you can't have. Most women can't have with their husbands. That they can only have with their best friends. Is that fair enough to say?
I mean, it's the conversations about the husbands, I guess, that you're,
right,
you're bringing to best friends.
Yes,
but I think it's like, there's just something in it. Like, we're just so closely knit into our friendships and our friends. And like, I know, like among my friends, we're like nonstop talking about like when we get old together and we've, you know, finally jettisoned the romantic partners and we're like going to move into a commune together. Or
yeah,
let's
it's interesting
make sure.
That. Are they going to die or what? How are you going to jettison them?
We're either going to outlive them or we're going to put them in kind of a storage, a humane storage.
Right. And you'll go off and you'll have a commune yourselves.
A commune, or maybe we'll like try and aim for the same high-end nursing home.
Right.
But it's definitely things me and my friends have talked about. It's like, when can we finally live together?
the stats are there. Women outlive men. That's the life expectancy for women is older than...
We're just laying the groundwork. But like,
I'm intrigued because it's something I haven't experienced, obviously, because I'm a man. No, but I haven't I've experienced friendship, but I haven't experienced a friendship between two women because I'm a man. I can't. I can only witness from the outside. So I'm intrigued by it. I'm intrigued by it as to how it's different.
Yeah.
And again, you don't know how it's different because you've never experienced male bromances, so you don't know. But I think from looking in on it, I'm obviously married. I have five sisters. I've worked with a lot of women over the years. Looking in on it, that there is, it's stronger than male friendships in many ways.
Yeah, well, I don't want to generalize, but yeah, for sure, it seems that way to me. But I think as well, the things that, like, I think when it comes to friendships, I think it's really, like, my hot friend, what I'm hearing from readers is that, like, it's really, they're relating massively.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about it then.
To their lives.
Yes.
And I think the things that, like, kind of, you know, the female friendship's got a bit of a reputation, like a bad reputation, for being kind of toxic, which I hate. And I absolutely, like, totally reject that characterization. I think female friendship is, like, really, like, there is strong bonds, and there is, when a betrayal occurs, it's like a deep hurt, you know, that kind of way.
Yeah.
But I feel as well, like, we're at a kind of an interesting juncture, because I think we have, like, all the dynamics of school, you know, they're actually kind of following us into adulthood.
Why is that?
And I think it's because a lot of, like, us are on social media now, and we had this opportunity to kind of, like, sort of see our friends, like, living their lives, and it can lead to kind of hurt feelings, or feeling like, I feel left out sometimes. I'm 38, you know what I mean? And I think, like, I see it in my mum's generation, like, it's still the same kinds of, like, friendship dynamics.
But there can be very obvious exclusion with social media, can't there? And you touch on it here, you know, one of the characters, not to give too much away, but Claire.
Yeah.
Like, she feels excluded.
Totally. Yes. And that's the other thing. Like, some of us have these kind of legacy friendships where, like, you might have lived on the same estate when you're kids, and then you kind of, you stay in this friendship group and you have a kind of a WhatsApp chat, but you're all in different lives now.
You move on.
You often don't have a lot in common anymore. And it's kind of, that's kind of the situation Claire finds herself in. And it's all kind of brought to a head because one of the girls in the group chat is getting married.
Yes, yeah.
And, like, there's nothing like a wedding to really, like,
the politics of weddings, just mad stuff, isn't
it? Absolutely, absolutely. And then, like, I think the way we all kind of communicate now is the group chat massively on WhatsApp. And we all know, you know, the terrifying scenario when a group chat goes suddenly very quiet, and you start to think, is there a side chat going on?
Right.
Or we've all
been a subgroup, a breakaway faction.
Like, we've all either been in the breakaway faction or we've become suspicious.
I'm intrigued. How does that start? Who broaches it? Like, because you can't obviously say it on the WhatsApp here. We're forming a subgroup here, so it has to be when you're out for drinks or something, is it? Let's extricate X or Y from the group and let's form our own group.
You cannot make me admit to participating in this on live radio. It's probably something like that.
I suppose you could feign it that it's some activity that maybe this person isn't involved in. It could be.
Yeah, it happens.
It could be a book club. It could be something.
It happens.
Right, okay.
You know, and like the terror of the side group is very real, I think.
But without giving too much away, it can be serious for people, you know, because we know, and it's well documented, that some people, the measure of their worth is there in ticks and likes and correspondence on social media.
Sure, yeah.
And if that isn't delivered, then it's damaging to their self-worth, and that can damage their mental health, and that happens. I'm not going to give away too much here, but it does, you know.
Yeah, definitely. Like, I think the three characters in My Hot Friend, and I suppose, like, the reason it's such a big book is because there's three very kind of full stories in it.
And they all have their group of friends, yes.
Yeah, and they, like, Lexi, Claire and Joanne are all the kind of main characters, and they don't know each other at the beginning beginning of the book, but they eventually, through each of their kind of own circumstances, find themselves in their 30s in need of a new best friend, essentially. And like, for very different reasons. So as you said, Claire is feeling left out of, you know, her school friends. You know, she feels like they moved on. She also wasn't picked to be a bridesmaid in the wedding party. And
I felt that. That was like a kick, wasn't it?
Yeah, she's been given the wedding favours to make. That's her like contribution. And then Joanne is the first of her friends to have a baby. And like, so she's in her late 20s. She's kind of stumbled into motherhood. And there's just this chasm between her and all her mates who just have no idea like what her new life is. And understandably. And then there's Lexi, who is kind of co-host of this like absolutely like hit podcast with her best friend. So they have this kind of weird thing that's evolved, which is that their friendship has become like a commodity. They earn their living from it. They perform their friendship to thousands of listeners. And, you know, like it like goes belly up and like what, you know, what is
what
Lexi left with?
Yeah,
like I suppose she's kind of grappling with like the decisions that she's made in terms of like being a celebrity bestie and like how kind of maybe shallow that really ended up being.
Yes,
you know,
because she's obsessed with relatability to the point where she can't say she's buying a new house because that wouldn't work well with her listeners because they think that she's one of them.
Yeah.
And that is the thing about, and I'd say a lot of people who listen to, say, for example, Vogue and Joanne, they feel like they know them.
I know. I think they're my best friends.
Oh, do you? Right.
Oh, you, I do. Yeah. Are they not my best friends? I listen every week. That's the thing I found with writing the Lexi Amanda podcast storyline was, like, obviously I do podcasts myself, but I am an avid listener to podcasts. And all the podcasts I love the most are like duos, girl duos who are best friends. And like, I cannot believe that like they are not my closest friends.
Is it the reason
it's
for
called parasocial,
parasocial
this relationship? Yeah,
right.
That's like kind of, it grows on the internet, it's one-sided, you are deeply invested in someone's life, they don't know you exist. You know, it's not necessarily
always
unhealthy.
It's realer than, say, you know, film stars or TV stars, because the people on the podcast are sharing a lot more about
their
lives.
Yeah. And it's a way more intimate medium.
Yes, yes.
You know,
because
they're
just having
ears.
The chats.
Totally.
Yeah, they're in your ears. You're eavesdropping. You feel you're there. You're probably even, you know, when you're out in your walk or wherever you listen to, you might even throw in a little bit, you know, you might talk back to them. Oh, no, I'd never do that or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
So, and what do you call it?
Parasocial.
Parasocial. This
yeah,
is a phenomenon,
yeah.
Is it?
Yeah, yeah. So I researched it a fair bit for the book because obviously Lexi and Amanda have like these legions of fans. Like they're really successful. Like they're nothing like my, not that my podcasts are unsuccessful, but like I'm not
you're
being,
talking Vogue and Joanne territory, millions, like,
Yeah. I'm not being offered six-figure deals, which Lexi and Amanda are in the book. They were kind of based on like an American podcast that had a very public acrimonious split. And it like, it's so interesting to observe something like that because it like divides the listeners. It's practically, you know, Team Lexi, Team Amanda in the book and stuff like that. And like, it's just, I found it like a really interesting kind of like terrain to mine for fiction and comedy.
This, I suppose, speaking of mining, this is the book, I haven't read all your other ones, but you seem to mine a lot of your own personal experience in this book.
Yeah.
Like one of the characters ends up in psychiatric care.
That's true, yeah.
And you've been in psychiatric care.
Snap, yeah,
yes.
That's me.
And you write, you know, you write very well, obviously, because it's first-hand experience.
Yeah.
And did you find that difficult?
I did find it difficult because, so Claire has the same illness as me, which is bipolar. And I found it very hard to like really kind of sit down and think, how am I going to like show people what like a manic episode is, for example, like in an authentic way, but also like, you know, there's a lot of responsibility when it comes to writing about those kind of issues. And like, I use the Samaritans website actually a lot for kind of guidelines on how to kind of write about those
issues.
And
then you give their number and you write a letter at the end of the book to your readers.
I do, yeah. I do, because I think what Claire experiences in the book is, you know, unfortunately really common, but also I wanted to normalize it. Like, it was definitely, you know, why I wanted to set part of the book on a psychiatric ward, because, you know, I've been there and I know that it's a normal normal thing, you know, and it shouldn't be shrouded in any shame or like it shouldn't be hidden, you know. The more normal we can sort of treat it, the better. Mm. It's like a hospital stay and you might need it at certain points in your life and then you might be well again. Mm. But yeah, like her experience is very close to my experience, but I still kind of found it challenging to like, how am I going to bring a reader on this journey with Claire and for them to understand what she's going through? Because like a lot of mental illness is really hard to relate to because, you know, like Claire sort of says in the book, like she has the mads.
Yeah.
And I very much have the mads myself. Yes. And sometimes when I'm describing like some of the more off the wall, scarier symptoms, like, for example, kind of delusional thinking, you know, I once became kind of convinced that I was possessed and that was what was wrong with me.
Right.
And like trying to explain that to somebody who's never experienced anything like that kind of, you know, full mental takeover.
So that voice is in...
No, it was more just this like real strong conviction.
Right.
It luckily passed very quickly and I had kind of enough rational kind of thought left to be like, it's not great that I'm thinking I might be possessed. Must get to the doctor.
Right,
and I did and it was great and I received amazing care.
Yeah.
But that's the thing, you see, when you describe something like that to, you know, another person who's never experienced it, it definitely kind of comes off pretty weird. And so I wanted to show some of that side of mental illness in My Hot Friend with Claire, but in a way that people could access and understand. Mm. And so, you know.
And they can rest assured that it's very close to the truth because you've been there.
It's a funny one because I can't speak for like all people that have bipolar.
No, but you can speak for yourself.
Well, yeah, that's it. Yeah. And that's the thing when you're like writing about mental illness, and I've written about it loads in my nonfiction work as well. You know, I do feel like a sense of responsibility.
And we've spoken about it before.
My first book was about a nervous breakdown.
Yes, yeah.
And you very kindly had me on your TV show back in 2016 when I was about to drop a baby any minute. So,
yes,
you know,
you've three
you
children.
Ran the gauntlet of letting me sit on your couch. I have three kids now, so my oldest is 9, I have 6 and I have a 3-year-old.
So that was your second, I don't know.
That was the middle one,
And how are you? I suppose that's a loaded question.
It is, I mean, depends on the day. I'm good. Obviously, it's just post-published week, so it's always really like high intensity, bringing a new book out and like, obviously, it's tough. It's very vulnerable, you know.
Yes, but I'm wondering, like, you know, because we hear an awful lot about triggers now. And over the years, have you, you know, not got used to it, but have you learned more about yourself and your bipolar condition that you know what's happening?
Oh,
you can sort of predict.
Yeah, I'm getting better and better at recognizing the signs. I'm getting better and better at like taking care of myself when I'm well.
Yes.
So that when I'm unwell, I have kind of like resources, I guess. And like I have spotters, not like the gym.
No, but friends. Who...
like a mental illness gym.
Yeah. that's not a bad idea. You're onto something there,
that's
I think.
It. Yeah, yeah. I have friends and I have my husband who are all like really good at kind of seeing on the horizon maybe
and
a
you're
bad
okay,
episode.
You're okay with them pointing it out to you?
Sometimes it can be quite hard to take.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Especially if I am kind of like tipping into a bad kind of episode. I can be very hard to reason with, I'm told. But I'm getting better at, better and better at like recognizing it, taking care of it. And for sure.
Do people understand bipolar? Do you reckon? Now, apart from what you've just said there about Claire and writing about it, but do they actually describe understand how it affects people in that the two opposite poles, you know, manic and depressed?
Like, I think people do. I mean, I do think that we're all becoming so much more literate in, you know, mental illness and talking about it and stuff like that. I think that, like, a lot of people have people in their lives with these kind of illnesses, you know.
And how does it affect your writing? I'm intrigued by that.
Yeah, like it doesn't. I don't know if it really.
So, for example, could you?
Much.
You know, would you know what sort of? You know, can you only write when you're well, or do you write when you're not well? And if you do that, can you recognise that when you read it back? There you go. Sorry, that's sort of a convoluted question, but you know what I'm getting at.
Yeah, no, I do know what you're getting at. It's definitely hard to quantify, because I think every time you write a book, no matter how many books you've already written, this is your first time writing this book.
Yes.
So it's kind of fascinating, because you just come to every book with this kind of new sort of set of problems and fun, but also angst and, you know, and like you have to kind of like maintain this belief in the story and belief in yourself that you can do it and you can tell the story. And like, definitely, I find like writing is such this like it's such a process of kind of just like a leap of faith the whole way and just trying to sustain belief. And that's when like an amazing editor like my editor, Ciara Dorley at Hachette, and my agents, like that's when the people you collaborate with right. come in
yes.
and say,
so this is longer. No, but I really like what I've read of it. I really enjoyed the characters, you know.
Yeah, I'm glad.
So
I'm really
Lexi
glad.
And Amanda, they host the My Hot Friend podcast. Yes.
Yeah.
And then Joanne.
And it's a very controversial podcast.
Yes, yes.
They're called the kind of Joe Rogans of Ireland in the book. And so that gives you some sense of the kind of stuff that they're saying on mic and facing backlash for.
Final
and
question.
And then Joanne is pretty funny, I think. I have to admit, I did name Joanne after Joanne McNally. Yeah.
Oh, no, like, she's not doing a podcast. She's the one who's just had a baby.
Yeah, yeah. And like Joanne McNally is just so hilarious. And I'm such a fan that I just was like, when the character for Joanne came to me, and she is like a real kind of, she does bring levity to the story.
Yeah.
I was like, I have to call her Joanne after Joanne McNally. But like, it's.
She celebrated her 40th birthday over the weekend.
Did she?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
My
Isn't
wife
she
told
amazing?
Me. Amazing, yeah.
And like, she's her
what
stamina.
A story.
Like, for her, her performing live. Like, I did two live shows back to back last week, and I'm like,
you're still
Bruce
recovering.
Springsteen. I was destroyed, and I was like, for future, like, going forward, I'm going to do like Bruce, and I'm taking a night off between each.
Okay.
But,
So the three main characters, Claire, Joanne, and Lexi.
Yeah.
And is there bits of you in all of them, or is one of them more like Sophie White?
Oh, there are definitely bits of me
bits
in all of them.
And
then bits of all the people whose personalities and lives I steal when I'm writing fiction. I'm
magpie.
Yes, yes. Absolutely. Very dangerous to say anything to me. Tell me any anecdotes. Oh, it's terrible. But like, My Hot Friend, as much as we've talked about like some of the darker themes in it, like it is your holiday
read.
Oh,
no, it is. It is. Like, it is. And you want to know what happens, you know. And,
yeah, I hope so.
And
I mean, you
can tell from the first few chapters that these are people who don't know each other, but they're going to end up knowing each other, and you're intrigued to find out how that happens.
Exactly, because they couldn't be more different.
Yes, yeah, yeah. Sophie, great to see you. My Hot Friend is in bookshops now. You'll recognise it. What's the official green? Is that a
lime?
Lime green,
oh, yeah.
Okay. Lime
I
green.
I love a neon.
With hot pink.
Hot pink,
yes,
yeah.
Yes,
and that's Amanda on the cover.
Yeah, yeah.
The Hot Friend.
Thanks, Sophie. Thanks so much. We'll take a quick commercial break.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.